voice of Gaia. Will the wind marsh and red wing fly? Will he be the voice of the world? Lizard on the rock, beast on the care. Will he be the voice of Gaia? Heron on the titan, great brown bear. Will he be the voice of the world? Calling up a green man, we are gathering. Calling up a storm cloud, calling back the light. Calling up a horn one, we are gathering. Calling up a whirlwind, calling back the light. Calling up a wild thing, we are gathering. Lovers in the dark, calling back the light. Calling up an oak king, we are gathering now.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para X Radio Network. Tonight's opening song, Gathering, is just one of the few you'll be hearing during the next hour, because my guest is Christopher Bingham, who founded the seminal pagan band Gaia Consort, in 1997. And we're gathered here tonight to talk and listen to some really great music. Now, the band is the original incarnation of this Seattle-based folk rock music group, Bone Poets Orchestra. Now, Gaia released their first album in 1999 and three albums subsequently after that. And I came across the band quite accidentally and serendipitously and really liked what I heard. So I asked Chris if I could play their music from time to time here on Stirring the Cauldron. And he generously said yes. And so he's here tonight to talk about the bands, the music, and you get to sit back and enjoy some of it as well. So, Chris, thank you for permission to play and welcome to the show.
Hi. No, yeah, no problem. It's great. It's good to be here.
It's always nice to support, you know, pagan bands and stuff, and we're always looking for new music, and I've told several people about Gaia Consort, and they've gone listening to it and are coming back, like, you know, doing handstands because they really like it too.
Cool.
So, yeah.
That's what we like.
You're getting the word out.
Yay.
Now, you know, there's an interesting kind of story here, because when I was nosing around for info on the band, I was pleased to see that it was never about making it big in the music industry, per se. I mean, you kind of steered clear of the usual venues of clubs, coffee houses, and you still managed to build a huge audience. And that led to being invited to a variety of festivals and events, and you headlined the long-running Heartland Pagan Festival in Kansas and others. Were you always a kid who did things the hard way?
I don't know. Maybe. That's a really good question. I mean, I don't know if the traditional route is necessarily the easy way. You know, it kind of ends up being, you know, you do it yourself or nobody, because nobody else is going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. So we did, I've been playing, I've been, you know, performing since 1978, you know, when I was interested in being signed on a major label, I've never done what people are doing at the time. You know, when grunge was the big thing here, I was being a candy ass folk singer. You know, when punk was happening, I wanted to be Pat Metheny. I was studying jazz, you know. So, because, you know, I go with what hits me and what works, you know. And yeah. And just, you know, and with in rock and roll, I'm blessed with this very sweet tenor and can't scream to save my life, you know. You know, you work with what you've got and you do it. And I did a fair amount of playing clubs as a solo act and in some bands and kind of banged my head against the wall doing that. And we had this interesting experience that we called the European Disaster Tour in 1996, where we just basically lost everything and came back and had to put everything down for a while and work day jobs. to pay the family back for losing a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But we mostly did that. And when we got back to a point where we could play again, where it felt good to play again, mm-hmm. We made some choices about, I decided to stop banging my head against the clubs because I had one honest club owner tell me, you know, that I would never get a Saturday night because I could bring 300 people into the room and they wouldn't drink enough beer to keep him in business. Oh. And he really loved our music. You know, we could get a Tuesday night once every 2 months or so. You know, I mean, it was a nice revelation, really, to finally get some honesty about how it works, just to talk to him about his bottom line, you know. So we started doing house concerts, and we decided that if we had 11 people in the room and they were listening, we were being a success. And that really kept us going and doing it for a long time. In 1998, we started working on the album, the first album. And long before there was crowdfunding, we've been doing the Adopt-A-Song deal. And we raised the money to do our first Gaia Consort record. I'd done two Christopher Bingham records before then. Plus a bunch of others in college and all that stuff, but stuff that we released. And by the time we got through the recording, we were ready to do a larger room, and we were able to bring the whole band in and play a community center. And weirdly enough, we filled up the room. It was only 100 people, only 100 people.
Yeah,
but you know. If only that was my standard these days, you know. You know, we started building from that, and I think we did all right. I think there's I think you don't realize when you're peaking, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, because you never kind of feel it, because you're always waiting for it to happen, so it can pass you by sometimes. But you know, you're talking about playing for 100 people. Well, I was reading on your website that when you debuted at Nudestock in 97, you got a standing ovation from 800 naked sunbathers.
Yes.
Now that's not half bad.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That was pretty cool. That, you know, and they weren't necessarily there to see us, you know, but they liked what we did, and that was what mattered. And, yeah, Nudestock was a trip, you know. I'm the guy that put out the bumper sticker that says body modesty is a social disease, you know. You know, 1,000 naked hippies in the woods. That's our version of utopia, you know.
Tim will be glad to hear that the next time he does a sky-clad maypole dance. So this
there
is
you
good. Yeah, you just
there you go.
Him that it's really okay. Now, a major theme of much of Gaia Consort's work is the greater world and how it affects our lives. Religion is one of the things. Other songs decidedly have an anti-war tone, but there's also a pagan side to this. And you've played to lots of pagan audiences. So how does the pagan connection come into play with your music and your life?
It's interesting. I never, even when I was part of the Church of All Worlds Nest here in Seattle, I never really felt like I connected to the white light stuff, to the religious stuff. I've always been a heavy agnostic and basically an atheist, but I wanted to be part of something that would help our culture celebrate the natural world. And my thinking was that Gaia Consort could do that by connecting with pagans and other people who would jive with that worldview.
Nature-based people.
Yeah, basically nature-based people. And so, yeah. I mean, when we started, I was really on fire with the ideas of James Lovelock's Gaia theory. I loved Starhawk's cultural vision. I basically I'm a hippie at heart, you know. Mm-hmm. So I thought that, you know, I mean, that maybe, you know, the best we could do is if we could get people to focus on things like celebrating the cycles, the natural cycles, and just to be aware of them, mm-hmm. that would be a win. And mm-hmm. if we spoke the language, then pagans would see the name Gaia Consort and that we were speaking the language, and they would relate to it in a strong way. And that panned out in the sense of people liked it and bought it. People kind of, toward the end, I was looking at a lot of people and feeling like I was selling more religion than I wanted to be selling. And that was difficult. I felt like I wasn't necessarily being honest. So that was 2008 came along. The bottom dropped out of the world, you know, financially.
Yeah.
We had the crash, and I also realized that we got tons of reviews as Gaia Consort, and one of the reviews said, "Man, for a crunchy granola name like Gaia Consort, the band really rocks." And I kind of put myself in the shoes of a booking agent or a festival booker who's looking at a stack of 50 or 75 CDs, bands that all want to come to play to their show, and they look at the title Gaia Consort and it's in the trash. Boom. You know, because their whole job is to cull what they don't want and find what they want. So we decided to rename the band Bone Poets Orchestra, and try something different. And, I like what we're doing and people like what we're doing, but it's a little more difficult to get, to connect with people. You know, it's from a strictly marketing perspective, you have that narrow band of pagans that are really excited about anything pagan. Try to expand that a little bit, and you're just music.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, my listeners go across the board. Some are pagan, some aren't. I mean, you know, from every walk of life. But, you know, me as a pagan, sure. Do I love pagan music? Sure. But I also love medieval music. I also love classical music. I also love, you know, rock. So I think we all, anybody that really likes music, will jump genres anyway, as long as they like the music.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it needs a label, you know, but sometimes labels scare people off. True.
Yeah, it kind of goes both ways. And you know, I mean, that's the thing, is that what we were trying to do was to, I was trying to write music that integrated this stuff into a whole life, into a holistic life, you know. Mm-hmm. So not all the songs on the records are strictly pagan songs.
Exactly.
In lots of ways, far from it. You know, we... Mm-hmm. With Bone Poets, we took basically all the atheist songs off of the pagan albums and repressed it as atheist anthems, you know. So it's a thing. It's kind of interesting, you know. We've had a lot of different reactions to the thing, but people like it. I am so lucky. I can't complain about anything.
No. Well, because we're talking about pagans and I kind of cleverly planned this segue, we're going to we're going to play a song called The Old Ones. And that's because pagans do revere and worship and respect the old ones. And, you know, I just noticed that happened to be one of your songs off the Gaia Circles album. So, Tim, if you wouldn't mind, can you throw it on for us?
Yeah. forest, the climax was pointing toward heaven. Eons before Jesus came. But who will remember to speak of the old one? Who will remember when the old ones are gone? I was like you once. Place in heaven for me. I've seen too many clear cuts, too many landslides to lay on my hands and feet. Who will remember? Speak of the old ones. Who will remember? Ones are gone.
You know, Chris, on your website, there's a note that all the tunes on the site are up in MP3 format because they're meant to be heard by all and shared. And there's no, like, copy protection on the music, as is the case with most everyone else. That's very generous and quite rare. What brought that on?
as a listener, I really don't like if I buy a piece of music, if I buy any kind of product, I really don't like it when somebody tells me how I can use it. I'm opposed to DRM. I just think DRM is nasty. But the other part of that is that the way I say it is, please give me 100,000 people who are so excited about our music that they have to share it with 10,000 of their best friends. Because that's radio airplay for guys like me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm not losing a thing if I put that music out there. I'm gaining. And we also did an experiment where we decided to put up clips instead of the whole songs. Mm-hmm. And our traffic dropped by half.
Yeah, that's like going to Amazon, or not Amazon, going to iTunes, listening to the sample, just as you're getting into it. It starts in the middle somewhere and tails off, and then you don't really get to hear it all. And it's not
nobody great. Shares a, yeah, nobody shares a sample. So
no.
So we want, please, we love it when you buy our stuff. We love it. We have the Adopt a Song thing where people send us money from all kinds of places to get their name in the liner notes and to support the recording of it. And it's basically the music business has translated into a basically kind of a tip jar model. We've just been doing the tip jar thing since before everybody else, in the sense of the Adopt a Song thing, if I was a more crack promoter kind of dude, I was listening to the radio and there was a local artist about 5 years ago who said, and they were praising her for doing this innovative thing where she was doing this Adopt a Song deal. And it was like, why didn't I think to promote us as, innovative people? We did the Adopt a Song thing out of necessity because no one was going to invest in the music because there was never a return. Mm-hmm. But people are happy to support what they like. That's
absolutely.
Please download the stuff, share it, spread it around. And if it really beats your box, go buy it. Go buy the stuff. You can buy it on CD Baby. You can buy it direct from us in shiny discs that you can have all the artwork with. My wife Sue does the artwork on the records, it's any way you can support us, we're happy to. But mostly what I want to do is please give me the privilege of getting my little notes inside your head so I can twist your minds.
You want to give the website out because people can go listen to the tunes there. They can get the lyrics there. There's a whole lot on there. So what's the website?
So the website, there's two websites now since we changed the name. The one that has all the Gaia Consort stuff on it is GaiaConsort.com, G-A-I-A Consort, C-O-N-S-O-R-T. .com and the new stuff, we've done albums since then at bonepoets.com, one bone, many poets. It's all up there. It's all happening now.
Yes, it is.
Please go have a look, listen, read the lyrics. And there's a bunch of stuff on ChristopherBingham.com too. So I got all kinds of web presence going on.
Yeah, you keep people busy for an afternoon if they really want to get into it. All right, so your bio talks about some of your early muses. There was like Carlos Santana, but then you were raised on show tunes. But then the first album you ever bought was Black Sabbath's Paranoid. The first single that you ever bought was Don McLean's American Pie. Yep. And then you left home to go study jazz. So very, very, very across the board. Is your taste in music still very eclectic, or have you gravitated in any particular direction?
It's pretty eclectic. in the 70s, the whole thing was craft. I love Steely Dan. There's just nobody that no better players than Steely Dan. The stuff those guys do is crazy,
Uh-huh.
And it takes something to really play that. And so, I think the punk movement came about kind of, in response to that. They wanted, there was all anybody can play music and make the songs, and that was not where I went. So I went to study jazz so I could really understand music, and plus I wanted to be Pat Metheny. I saw Joni Mitchell in 1979, the night before I left for college, and she was backed up by Pat Metheny and Jaco Pastorius and Lyle Mays and Michael Brecker. And I don't know if any of you guys know those players, but they are monster players. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of one of the big epiphany moments where I said, I want to do that. And the first time that moment came over me was seeing Jethro Tull in January of 1975 when I was 14. Cool. And he comes out in a flash and a puff of smoke as, you know, dressed as Aqualung. And that's when I said, I want to do that. So, you know, it's all, you know, part of a big part of it was a real appreciation for craft and how music is put together. And that ends up being reflected in the work that we do. I have to spoo all night long about the people that I get to play music with because they are all amazing players. They are all world-class players. Jay Kenny, our co-producer, is an incredible keyboard player as well as incredible engineer and producer. Dan Moeller, you know, is right up there with Jaco Pastorius in the stuff that I hear him do and what he contributes to the band. We've got a great drummer. He's a Grammy nominee drummer, you know, and a fine string section. I love our string players. I'm just really lucky, you know. I mean, I guess, you know, what do the business guys tell you? That the one thing you never want to be is the smartest guy in the room. And I am most definitely not the smartest guy in the room. and the fact that these guys want to play this music for the pittance that that I'm able to pay them to do it is really astounding. And, you know, well, we've been doing it since 1998.
I don't think it's as astounding as much as it is doing something from the heart.
And yeah, I suppose. You know, I don't know.
I mean, a lot of us will do things that a lot of people would ask for money, but we do it for pleasure because it comes from the heart. And, right. You know, sometimes that's one thing money can't buy is doing something you love doing.
Sure.
You know, yeah. They can take it away from you, but you can't sell it.
Right.
All right. So I'm trying to get as many songs as I can because, honestly, the chat room, they love it. I mean, there's comments left and right in the chat room. So I'm going to get Tim on the ready because one of the other songs that I really, really liked, because this is my favorite bird, are Ravens. So can you tell us just a little bit about the song and how it came to be?
This is a long time ago.
I know. I'm here to confound people, just so you know.
When you talk about being on fire with ideas, I tend to roll that way. And there's a guy here who's part of the Haida tribe, which are located up on the islands to the north outside of Vancouver. I'm blanking on the name. But he wrote a book called The Raven Steals the Light. And it was something I studied in school in a book that I love. And it's Haida stories about Raven. Raven is very, on the coast here, you know, Raven is a major factor in all the tribal religions and the mythology and the stories. And they're all over the place. So I played with a lot of word things in it as well. You know, it's all there.
All right, Tim, there you go.
If Raven called your name one night, hey mama, hey na, hey na, hey, 12 more ravens chanting, hey na, hey na, hey. Death comes early, death comes mean, hey mama, hey na, hey na, hey. But old mama's children return to the dream time, hey na, hey na, hey. I wake, hey, mama, hey, na, na, hey, na, na. How many ravens would my soul make? Hey, na, na, hey, na, hey. One crow's sorrow, two crows' mirth. Hey, mama, hey, na, na, hey, na, na. Three crows' a wedding and four crows' birth. Hey, na, na, hey, na, hey. You're evil, hey.
blood in the heart. Hey mama, hey nana, hey nana, say it's merry meet and merry part. And merry meet again.
We're having our own private little jam session while you're listening to the music, and I'm really, really thrilled. But yeah. I digress. Thank you so much for that, Chris. We had a question from the chat room. Sherry wants to know, I guess it's kind of, well, there's two questions actually, but, you know, answer both or one. Which is your most favorite song lyric-wise, and which song was the hardest to write?
The lyric-wise thing varies a fair amount, though. I tend to land on "Face in the Clouds," also I'm really proud of. There's it's more like there's moments, there's verses that I'm really proud of. I'm really proud of the last verse of "Cry Freedom." I'm really proud of the center section in "Gathering." What else am I really proud of? What's favorite? I blank.
That's all right. You should be proud of them all, because there wasn't one, and I've been listening all week, and there wasn't one that isn't great, in my opinion. And they're all slightly different. You know, they're not. It's not all the same repetitive things. I mean, it's not only the music, but the messages change, you know, the focus changes, and it's really neat. Now, so, you know, at some point, all right, we talked about Gaia turning into Bone Poets Orchestra. Is the music different?
It's a little different. I mean, you know, and thank you for the wonderful compliments. You know, we're on album number 9 at this point. And one of the challenges is not repeating yourself and not playing the same groove on everything. And that's something that's really, if you want to talk about the thing that's hardest, in terms of writing, that's the hard thing, is going in different directions and still keeping people with you at the same time. As I've evolved as a musician, We basically added a string trio on the last record at Gaia Consort, which Vitus Dance, which was basically the first Bone Poets record, really. and I've fallen in love with string writing for the string trio that we have. So, in one sense, we've gotten more evolved from a kind of classical perspective. Our players are classically based, and on the other end, I'm playing a bit more electric guitar, And hopefully jamming a little more. So, and also psychedelic, I guess, you know, I've been using the, we've been calling it psychedelic chamber rock, for want of a better, frame for what we do. But, so it rocks a little more, it grooves a little more, grooves a little harder. Mm-hmm. And we're not limited. Lyrically it goes all over the place. It goes places where I probably would not have gone with Gaia Concert because it wouldn't have fit the theme. So, you know, I mean, you know, one of my favorites these days is Sex Change Ray Gun, you know. that probably would not have been a Gaia Concert song. Trying to think of what else. Ecstasy in the Ruins. Yeah, that's got pagan elements to it. It goes all over the place.
Did. Okay. You mentioned, because I'm trying to think of how many more songs we can get in before we got to, you know, get out. But you were talking about a new song that, Infinity, I believe.
Yeah.
That's the newest song. And I was going to play Strange World, but would you rather we listen to Infinity? Because we can do that.
Well, go ahead and play Strange World because it's more complete, you know, and it's also showing the...
Well, why don't you play us just a little bit of Infinity and then we'll switch over to Strange World.
Okay. Okay. So Infinity has this fancy beginning where the whole band is kicking in and there's all this wild stuff going on. I'm not going to try to play any of that, but I'll just play the lyric part that it comes out of. So it's... and you may have to ride the levels on this because I'll sing in full voice. It might get kind of loud. Finding my place in the time and space continuum isn't always easy, if you know what I mean. Leaves a trace with the lines in the mirror, crawling through the distance between you and me. When you're younger, all your thoughts are so bold that it feels like the road to infinity. Later you wonder, am I just growing old? Is it really the road to senility? Finding my place in the time and space continuum, caught in flagrante, we refuse to be shamed. I'm in a race to the gates of oblivion, skies full of lightning will spell out your name. When you're younger, there's no way to see into a future that's been to infinity. But I'm still filled with wonder at how skin against skin echoes deeper within to infinity. Place in the time and space continuum, cold is the water and hard is the stone. A few more freezes and summer will be on us. We'll gather up the lovers and count them as our own. When you're younger, all your thoughts are so bold that it feels like the road to infinity. I'm still filled with wonder at how skin against skin echoes deeper within to infinity. Racing senility. All the way to infinity.
You know, I just caught myself sitting here smiling. Yeah. I think that's great. Yeah. Cool. It's a rare thing. I don't really do that. That is, I love it. I love it. I mean, the lyrics, the music, and we very seldom, hardly ever, maybe, I don't think I've ever on my show ever had a live performance, so this is even better.
There you go.
And thank you so much for doing it.
You're welcome. Thanks for letting it out there. We record Basics on Sunday for it.
So. It's going to be good, yeah. Lily in the chat room says, I was smiling too, Marla. So, yeah, you're making people smile.
Cool.
This is good. So when writing a song, What comes first to you, music or lyrics?
It totally varies. Most of the time I spend I can tunesmith all day. Tunesmithing is melody and rhythm and that stuff. If I'm on it, that kind of seems endless. And then you start getting involved with writing the lyrics, and that's the work. It's all work. It's all, you know, I do spend a fair amount of time crafting the melodies and crafting the rhythms and, you know, all the stuff, scoring the string parts. The lyrics are the slow part of all the work. But sometimes they come first, and then it's still slow.
Yeah, and some things, I guess, the muse hits you, and they're easy. The words are easy, or the lyrics, or maybe they just join together really quickly, and yep. You know, you can just do, and it's done.
Sometimes it just feels like you're just vomiting what the universe is pouring through your skull, you know.
Yeah.
And those are the great days. Those are the great days, and you know. And then there are other days where it's like you get a line at a time, and 3 months later you get another line, you know. Mm-hmm. And my poor wife often has to deal with me waking up in the middle of the night, rolling over and scribbling down stuff that's coming into my head while I was dreaming. I've dreamt whole pieces of music and written them down and had them work, you know.
You know, I've heard other musicians say that as well.
Yeah.
I think it's a common thread, and it's really neat. I mean, like as a writer, you know, that happens to me. I'm scribbling down something that I'm dreaming about or thinking about. So I guess it just, you know, is across the board for everybody that is an artist of some sort.
You don't have when you're tired or you're sleeping or, you know, in between wakeful state or unwakeful state, your filters aren't set up. Your filters aren't filtering everything out. Exactly. So what bounces around in your head, you don't have you also don't have the distractions of, oh, you know, I've got to answer the phone, or there's some more email, or, you know, I should eat something, ice cream, you know, whatever. you know, but, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning, there's just you and the pad of paper in your head. And, you know, no distractions, no filters. And sometimes it's crap.
Yes, it is.
You wake up in the morning and go, well, that was ridiculous.
How was I thinking? Yeah, or not thinking, maybe.
Or
yeah.
I can't read that. I'm really tired. I have no idea what that was.
Yeah, some chicken was walking across the paper. We are quickly running out of time because I'm going to, as our outro, we're going to play Peace Now, which is a lovely, I adore that song. So before we jump into that, because we've got like a couple of minutes before we do that, this might be a good time to tell everybody again where they can listen to and buy your music, the websites and stuff, find out more about you, and where people can see Bone Poets Orchestra in person. Because if I'm not mistaken, there's a concert coming up later this year, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, October 17th at the Maidenbauer Theater in Bellevue. We get to do about one big show a year that we self-produce, and people come from all over the country sometimes to see us, which is great. So that's in Bellevue, Washington, October 17th. And then if you want to find out more about Gaia Consort and Bone Poets, again, the website is bonepoets.com, one bone, many poets. And Gaia Consort is GAIA CONSORT, as in consortium, or consort, lover, ships passing in the night, or ships traveling together, basically, sometimes passing in the night. I love the word consort because it has so many meanings.
But
that's where you can find out about us. You can buy all our stuff on all the usual places. If you're an iTunes person, you can get it on iTunes. You can listen to us on Spotify. You can listen to us on CD Baby. We get more money from CD Baby. Some of the old stuff is on Pandora. I don't know why they don't like the newer stuff. But basically all of the major channels that people buy music from, we're on Apple Music, iMusic now streaming, you know. So lots of venues, lots of ways to get it, and you can buy it directly from me. If you buy it from me online, either through the website, if you let me know about it, we'll sign the record for you. So
perfect.
So there you go.
I want to thank you for joining me tonight. This was a really, really quick hour, but I really happy to introduce you and your music to those who are listening in.
Well, thanks for having us.
You got to come back. I mean, it's just that simple. And you will.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, I can stir up a spell in the cauldron to make you come back if you don't want to, but we don't usually interfere with free will. So come back on your own volition and play us some more music.
I think we can do that.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we're going to leave you with peace now. And until next time, everyone, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Once a very long, long time ago, but beyond the time of kings, lived a dragon who became a beast and grew too heavy for its wings. He threatened fire and death to all. He threatened many things. So the town folk brought from all around all the wealth that they could bring. But some of them were curious and they said, "What is it for?" And when they brought him all they had, his answer was, "Bring more. And by the way, I'll need your sons and daughters for the coming war." Somebody said, "Hey now, hey, hey now, why not a little peace now? Hey now, hey right now, why not a little peace now? Peace now, right now, why not a little peace now?" Came a woman from the closest town to the cave in which he lived, and at the entrance laid her body down, saying, "I shall not be moved." And she said, "I'll not cooperate. I will feed your cause no more. No matter what you do to me, I'll not feed your filthy war." And he snorted, and he snarled, and he bared his teeth with rage. And with his massive talons, well, he crushed her like an egg. And he roared at their defiant stance, and he shouted at them,
keep a little peace now. peace now, right now? How about a little peace now? Hey now, hey, hey now, we need a little peace now. Hey now, hey, right now, why not a little peace now? Peace now, right now, we need a little peace now.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at this same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2014. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.